hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade, they talk about the things they did that day, they'll analyze the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown!
Oh, that's right. It's Rewind to SmackDown. We just got warmed up, a half hour of news talk. Unfortunately, a lot of injuries that we just went through, including one to Kevin Owens that we will be discussing in the show, but also the injury bug hitting AEW, and also going through Tony Khan's media call addressing the report earlier this week from SE Scoops' BJ Bethel about AEW's streaming numbers on Max and what his response was. The updated lineup for Dynasty, a hell of a tag match that New Japan held on Friday at their Junior Genesis show. And of course, going through some of the big announcements for WrestleMania weekend, Bloodsport, the Senior Scramble, and the clusterfuck at Spring Break Night 2.
There's a lot of wrestling coming up in these next few weeks, and everybody who is healthy and who is a wrestler will get some payday somewhere. Yes.
How are you bracing for that week? Are you ready?
Oh, man, I don't know. I haven't really had time to think about it.
It's coming up.
Yeah, 1 week, and well, it'll happen. I'll let you know afterwards. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. Well, quick housekeeping here. This coming weekend, we are going to have shows from Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. They're going to be covering Sakura Genesis. Saturday night, John Cena and Kate from Montreal go live with Collision Course, and you'll be hearing from Wei Ting and I Sunday night immediately after Dynasty with a full rundown of the show from Philadelphia. Also up this past week, we did what I thought was a pretty enjoyable show covering SummerSlam 1997 with a lot of news and a retrospective look at that time during the summer of 97 with the WWF. And also, I want to thank everyone that have been posting on the forum, because we had to start our new Ask Away thread from scratch, and we've got a ton of questions that have been thrown in there. So we're in good shape for Tuesday, and we will be doing our final Ask Away mailbag show when Wei Ting is a father of one.
Should be a big one. I always get, like you, John, I get a bit nervous when we don't get enough questions. So I threw the message out there on Patreon, and people came through in a big way. Like, I think this will actually end up being a bit of a longer one. So
yes. Well, we look forward to that. That'll be out Tuesday for all members. PostWrestlingCafe.com is where you can sign up now. You instantly get 30 days of access. That will include all of our WrestleMania week coverage if you sign up today, and access to all of our bonus shows from Collision Course, the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, where we go live immediately after the shows and cover the news of the day and all of your feedback and questions at the end as well. So
and that calls on Fridays. So if you guys stick around in the Post Wrestling Cafe after this review, we will get to your calls a bit later.
That is right. At the end of the review, jump into the queue. We want to chat with you tonight about SmackDown.
Wow, man. Bars. All that rhymed.
Did it? No.
Yeah.
Completely by accident. Nice. Okay. At this hour, you're lucky that I can even get a sentence out. But tonight, we had the Allstate Arena hosting SmackDown back in the USA. Announcement from WrestleTix of 15,368, and the crowd already chanting for CM Punk as they open the show, and there he is to come out and kick off the show, and he tells them that they all told us that the best TV audiences were overseas, but I knew we were coming to Chicago. And with that, he hijacks the camera and starts shooting the crowd, And Wei, this is more so your expertise, but what did you think of the framing by one Phil Brooks?
Pretty awful. But, you know, he also was speaking with a microphone on the other hand, and that's I think he was a little too zoomed in, so I don't really blame him. Yeah, but I really like the effect. Jericho's done this often, but it was fun.
Rico's job was not threatened here.
No, I don't think so. No,
he says that he's not supposed to be here, and then says, "Stop me if you've heard this before." And he explains that he was born at Silver Cross Hospital with a cord around his neck, and they had to bring me back to life. For those that don't remember the timing of this promo in the past, this was his go-home promo going into All Out 2002. 2022, which was the infamous press conference.
All right. Yes. Wow. Okay.
His goal is always to make new fans, and thanks to 16,000 here tonight, and says that he didn't listen when they told him he wasn't supposed to be here. Whether I'm out here and lacing up my boots, or when I go to the grocery store and I'm told I'm not supposed to be here. I don't know what kind of like Whole Foods he's going to, but he's got to find a new grocery chain, because I've never had that problem. You're in the produce section. It's like, you don't belong here. Get out.
Are we sure this isn't one of those moments where like we both might have misheard something? Because I guess I didn't really pay such close attention to this line, but did he actually say, when I'm at the grocery store and somebody tells me I'm not supposed to be here?
Yes, that's what he said here.
Well, what is he doing at the grocery stores?
That requires context. Like, you have to explain that. Not normal.
Is he taking
to be told you have to leave the grocery store?
Well, is he taking too much time, like picking the mangoes? Like, is he like feeling every single one of them to make sure he's getting the perfectly ripe ones? I don't know. Like, what else is he doing? Like, is he putting the Cheerios back in the sort of oatmeal aisle? Like, what sort of mischief is CM Punk?
Maybe he's the guy that goes to the express aisle with more than 10 items to do his whole like shop.
Get out of here.
One of those guys. I'm a self-checkout guy myself.
You are, eh?
Shocking, right?
Yeah, a little shocking. Honestly, it's way more work to do it myself than to just like put it on the conveyor belt, let somebody else do it.
Well, he then goes to mention backyard wrestling here in Chicago, mentions Steel Domain, and coming out dressed as Al Capone at WrestleMania 22 when he was told that this is the best it would ever get for him. Pauses to thank his wife, April, and puppy, Larry, and wouldn't be here without this city. Promises to whip Rollins' ass, put a beating on Reigns, and then he is met by Paul Heyman, who comes down apologizing for being late, and calls Punk his best friend in the world. An ECW chant begins, and Heyman says, "Punk, you belong here, and you belong in the main event of WrestleMania." And then pretty much does a recap of the last like 8 months of storylines and angles, from Heyman being taken out by the Bloodline, recruiting Punk for War Games, and the favor. But he has one more favor to ask of Punk. He's asking him, "What do I owe you?" Because Roman's angry, he's not here yet, and he wants to know what this favor is. Punk will tell Roman to his face later tonight what the favor is. And unfortunately, I have heard that sometimes your GPS can delay your arrival in Chicago. And clearly Roman Reigns was driving around the wrong lake, because he would not show up for another 2 hours and 45 minutes. It was amazing that this guy made it with about 10 minutes left of the show. But he did get there.
It's funny how that all nicely times out, right?
Yeah. Amazing.
Hey, I enjoyed the segment here to start off the show. CM Punk in Chicago. I mean, I think every town wishes they could have a representative like a CM Punk. You know, he is one of the best promos really ever, and he puts so much of that energy into representing his hometown. How could you not forgive this guy for anything wrong he might have done in the past? How could you not love him if you happen to be from the city? So,
as long as he's not shoplifting, yeah, I have no problem.
Yeah, I don't think he would be. Do you see what he spent on sneakers on that Complex video? Way too much. Way too much.
What were these? These were like Chicago-style CM Punk sneakers that he was wearing. I'm sure these were gifted to him, but I'm sure they would. What would the average fan? Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah, these looked like.
Didn't notice.
Probably selling these for like $2,000 at the World in Vegas in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm assuming he didn't steal these ones. Maybe he got them for free. I don't know. Some sneakerheads out there, I'm sure, will I've done all the research about that. Yeah.
A good segment, and I'm going to be...
the reveal later tonight. It didn't really tease, though.
I'm really interested if we do end up getting kind of the breakdown, because this favor has been built for months, and I wonder if, like they really hit it hard. Like, they had the graphic up throughout the night. Punk reveals the favor. Like, they were cashing in the favor tonight and right. milking this for that final segment. And, man, did this crowd want to hear what the hell this favor was. But before that, it is the WWE debut of Rey Fénix. And there is Nathan Frazier in the ring. And I was just ready for this match. I was like, this is perfect. I mean, this is a clear idea of... they could have put Birdo in there as the debut or anybody. And instead they decide, let's just give them like a killer opponent to go out there and just have a hot 8 minutes. And that's what we got here.
Did you get Nathan Frazier's entrance during commercial?
No, but I was also behind. So I'm sure if I had been watching live, I would have gotten to see it, but no.
Right.
I didn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was behind too. So like, it just kind of came back with, oh, Nathan Frazier is already in the ring. So that stood out to me a little bit just cause, we were in the UK for the last couple of shows where I think some people might've suspected that he would have had the Axiom spot, or he might've gotten one of those like big fanfare types of like, you know, hometown or home country, you know, welcomes. Instead, to see him just kind of like get this, like, I hate to call it enhancement talent role, but that's what it was in Chicago. I wondered if he could have gotten better, but if he did get the entrance during commercials, I guess maybe that's fine.
Well, I mean, I think they just wanted to present you like with a really great match. And this was Fénix's first match since July 26th.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah. It's been out a long time. So this was really just Fénix pretty much having an opponent to do whatever he wants with as a grand showcase. He did his tiger feint into a big spin kick. And then this head scissors sends Fénix to the floor, and Frazier goes for a tope suicida, and his feet got caught onto the ropes, and man, nearly died here as he goes to the ground. The Fénix recovers, hits a tornillo off the top, and then in the ironic sequence of the match, Frazier missed his Fénix splash on Fénix, and then is caught with a drop kick, and then he does his running rope walk PK, which is now the goodbye amigo kick.
Yeah.
He has to yell that out now when he hits this kick.
Well, Joe Tessitore has to do it, which I think is the tougher job, but yeah.
Goodbye amigo kick. He hits the fire driver and nearly murders Nathan Frazier with this.
So
I thought the man was dead.
Yeah, so that move is like sort of now delivered rather than, you know, as a tombstone suplex. Like, it's delivered like an Emerald Frozen style. And yes. Somehow it's made to even look more devastating than the pile driver version. So I wonder if he'll continue using that one in the same fashion.
Yeah, I don't know how many people will be raising their arms to take this one from Rey Fénix, because Frazier somehow kicked out of this. So that was his big spot, was kicking out of this. And then after a leaping spin kick to Frazier on the buckle, he hits him with what is now the Mexican Muscle Buster, the MMB, to win in 8 minutes and 17 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. So the Muscle Buster, again, like the
Mexican
way
Fénix Muscle Buster. Okay. Sorry.
Not to be confused with the Japanese Muscle Buster or the Samoan Muscle Buster, I suppose, but there is a difference with the move. He cradles the opponent into a Michinoku driver after the drop. So it's not like the way Joe does it, which I think is the reason why it's probably, you know, maybe considered a little bit safer and therefore maybe permissible. I thought this was a great debut. You know, if the point was to show why Rey Fénix should be a big deal and why he's somebody who deserves the fanfare, I thought the match completely achieved that.
Is there a better ending to the El Grande Americano character than falling to the Mexican Muscle Buster?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I mean,
I would love a program with Gable and Fénix.
We do have a brand split to respect, John. I don't know if you're aware. Okay.
Yes, it was very much respected on this show.
Yeah. With the main event. With CM Punk starting it and closing the show. Yeah. Although is he SmackDown? No, he's Raw. He's Raw.
He's Raw. I think Rollins is Raw, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say I thought Frazier at times looked maybe a little bit too rushed there. You know, that tope is something that he probably would complete 1,000 times perfectly. But the one time he misses it happens to be on you know, one of the bigger stages that he's wrestled. Phoenix, though, you would expect somebody to be making his debut in the WWE to feel some of those nervous, maybe mistakes and such, and he didn't do any of that. Like, he looked like he was able to execute everything he did with the same speed and composure that we've grown very accustomed to. So he made everything just look easy and really an elite level, you know, high flying performer.
I mean, if they go guns blazing, this guy could be really something, like above, like, for whatever you want to say about like the limitations of a Dragon Lee that we've seen on the main roster, or like looking for that next Mexican superstar. Like, they've done a good job of introducing Penta, but Phoenix is just he's just another level of performer, and I just awesome. Thought he yeah. looked great here. And they gave him the mic after Byron Saxton is in there, and he just says he's waited. He noted his history here in Chicago, and he's got he says that I've waited my whole life to say I am WWE.
I am Animo. Yes, which I think means like spirit or something, or like it's from what I could tell, a bit tough to directly translate to English, but. Great debut, you know, like getting him the chance to speak, I think, is the difference between just like, hey, like, here's another great wrestler.
That's what got Penta over. It was not like the match. It was when he got to talk like afterward.
Yeah.
And they pretty much haven't let him talk too often since then. But that was
he said enough, you know, like, I think it's especially important upon debut, where, again, it's the difference between simply being a great wrestler and a great wrestler who's also somebody who you might be able to identify with. I don't know if like I like for somebody who like in AEW, I think, did the majority of the speaking for the tag team. I actually feel like I enjoyed Penta's debut promo even a little bit more than Phoenix's. But I thought Phoenix like sounded like good and had very passionate, charismatic delivery. And I think that itself is going to go a long way. These masks that they're selling for Penta, like, he's
good. And Phoenix, they got them up today.
Both of those guys are going to be enjoying some very healthy paychecks, and you can't be happier for the two of them, you know? Yeah.
It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is two editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. Legado reacts to this, and Santos is very impressed with Phoenix, as were many, and he expects that from Los Garza, and Berto calls him a flash in the pan. I'm better than him, and Santos goes to seek out Nick Aldis, so next week it'll be Phoenix against Berto in Seattle. First promo was Drew McIntyre wearing the eye patch that he's just taking from this attack last week, and says how that Damian Priest has profited off him being screwed. No one cared about Damian Priest until he started feasting off of my scraps. You could never dispute any of my logic that I put out there. All I wanted you to was to face me like a man. Now I could lose my eyesight, and I may need to pray. And everyone knows that when I pray, bad things happen.
Mm-hmm. So this is a worked eye injury, I'm assuming, right?
It sounds like he got something in his eye. It wasn't like nothing, but I think he's just going to run with this eye patch deal. And sure, it is a cool look for him. So
very cool.
Why not? I mean, yeah, Jean-Pierre Lafitte, have we had an eye patch? So
yeah. I'm down with eye patch Drew, pirate Drew here. Mainly because I think it's a real struggle for somebody like him to move on from CM Punk, because I think he did so well with the CM Punk feud, right? But I think doing this sort of injury angle, giving us this sort of visual reminder of the injury from the spot, it really helps me feel like Drew now has a bigger focus than just CM Punk. You know, he has enough reason to hate Damian Priest now, as much as he hated CM Punk in the past.
Yeah, this could have been Ray all those years ago.
My eye. Yeah. It's out.
He should talk to Ray about how you regrow.
Yeah. Do stem cells work on eyeballs?
Apparently so, yes. Saxton is with Braun Strowman, who says he's going to buzzsaw Jacob Fatu and go to WrestleMania. When Sokoa and Tama walk up to him, LA Knight gets in between, tells Braun to not waste his energy, and then he gets into it with Tama and starts mocking Tama as he then just walks right out to the ring for our match with LA Knight and Tama Tonga, non-title. And this was a match. Knight was in control for a period until he got rammed into the desk. And Sokoa is getting involved from the floor as Tonga controls throughout the break. After missing an elbow drop, Knight does his comeback. BFT gets blocked. And then Knight ducks a Samoan spike from Solo, who's up onto the edge of the apron, nails Solo. And after a roll up from Tama, Knight gets back to his feet, hits the blunt force trauma, and pins Tama Tonga in 9 minutes and 15 seconds.
Fine match, forgettable, you know. I feel like I say that often about LA Knight matches. I think there was a time where, like, I found it very novel to see him sort of ascend to this level where maybe he was expected to be a little bit more dynamic. And I feel like we've topped out on how dynamic an LA Knight could be in ring, and we kind of have for a while. It seems like he's kind of got this template now down. It gets a strong reaction from the crowd because he's such a big personality, but he's not really going to surprise us with much else beyond this level.
Yeah, I can't say anything much different. We will talk later about his opponent for WrestleMania and the match that they utilized tonight to set that one up. Saxton goes to Heyman, who is out waiting in the parking lot for Reigns to arrive, and Heyman looks straight into the camera and says to Punk that no matter what the favor is, I will say yes to it. Just tell me what it is so he can placate Reigns. And then a vehicle pulls up. He thinks it's Reigns, but instead it is Seth Rollins telling Heyman he looks horrible and said he had a great week. He has formulated a plan for WrestleMania and said that you dug yourself into a hole with this favor, but it's going to affect me too. So I too will be out there tonight. Latest tease of the man we assume to be Aleister Black, who now gets all the vignette attention. When are we going to start the Miro vignettes?
Shortly, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Their editors are going to be busy. I mean, if they got to make ones for Cobb, for Aleister Black, I mean, how many dark, mysterious figures can we show silhouettes of?
What would you do for Cobb? I guess. like
corn
kernels. Yeah.
What would Vince McMahon do with 40-plus-year-old Jeff Cobb in 2025?
I don't know. The corn farmer, Jeff Cobb? Yeah, would that work? Popping Jeff Cobb?
He never signed Jeff Cobb, so maybe that's the answer right there. But I think he has a better shot in this regime. And then it was Time Wei for the face-to-face segment. And one day we're going to get a YouTube playlist of these, and Wei Ting is probably going to relive this one.
I look forward to the shoot interview with either of these participants where we can just tell all on what exactly went on.
That's what I want, like the High Spots shoot interview in 2050 with Tiffany Stratton about this segment. So a couple weeks ago, they did their kind of satellite face-to-face where Charlotte Flair basically steamrolled Tiffany, and they've used that as kind of like the legit issues here between these two, that she just steamrolled her in this segment. So this was the comeuppance for Tiffany to obliterate Charlotte. So we have Wade Barrett as the moderator, as Tessitore mentions. Literally, Charlotte steamrolled her in their last segment. So Flair gets booed, and she says, "That's power." And Tiffany then asks Chicago, "What time is it?" as they yell, "Tiffy time." And I'm just thinking, God, is this going to be dreadful? And Stratton states that Flair's biggest competitor all these years is the fans. You're never going to win them over. You pretend that you're above them, but then we see you crying on some talk show. So we are...
So that is in reference to an actual interview she did.
This was the Sherry Shepherd show the other day that Charlotte was on. And yeah, she, to my knowledge, this is the first time she's spoken about her divorce from Andrade. Mm-hmm. And it was like a very, like, you know, she explained like how embarrassed she was, the fact that this was her third divorce, and the fact that there were going to be comparisons made to her father, and she tried to just hide it. And it did not break for quite a few months. It was when the divorce filing finally occurred that it came out, and she talked about this, and just I thought like it was like the most like real set of a like emotions that you get from a Charlotte Flair, that I think is one of the critiques of the on-screen character, is just like it's she's just such like this one-dimensional figure in her presentation, and here she is in this incredible like struggle that she's been through, not the least of which is that she's going through this divorce as she's had this year-long knee injury she was also coming back from on top of that last year.
It tells you the mindset that she was re-entering the WWE with ahead of what was supposed to be a big babyface run. If you remember that very first promo after she won the Rumble.
Very much.
She was about to cut a big promo, I'm sure, talking about some of these struggles, getting into sort of that big comeback that she had to.
And I'll guarantee you, if you watch, this is, it's up on YouTube, like this interview, and it's only about, like, it's under 10 minutes. I guarantee you, if you watch that segment, you would have thought Tiffany Stratton was the biggest heel in this segment. Because she just rode Charlotte, and all the material was for Tiffany here. And like, anyway, let's go through it first, because sure. I definitely want your thoughts on the segment. So she states how Flair, she goes over, you know, we see you crying on a talk show, yet you think you're above the fans. You're always going to be second to your father, and you're going to be second to me at WrestleMania. Flair just blows this off, saying that's the same verbiage I've heard over the last decade from all my opponents. And now the crowd, it's like super loud boos. Like, this is not quite like Dominic at his peak level, but not too far off. This was really loud. Yep. And Flair was really stifled by this. She cannot get anything out. She would like go to start her lines and then just stop. It was almost as though she didn't know if she should continue or ride the boos more. And it just was, I thought, very awkward on Charlotte's behalf. And that just gave Stratton, like, she just kept going here. Stratton says, Flair eventually just, like, gives up and tells Stratton, you can have the last word. And Tiffany points out that, what were you doing when you were 25? You were trying to become a volleyball player while drinking in your dad's basement. And I'm going to WrestleMania as the women's champion at 25. She says, Charlotte, you've got nothing on me. You're the queen of shit. And Flair then mocks her squeaky voice, which I can guarantee you this is not the first time she has done this, because she seemed too seasoned for this mockery of Tiffany Stratton. And Stratton,
just before we move on, the problem with, like, so her big line was, what, you're full of shit or something like that? The word shit, it was supposed to use as like a big exclamation mark. The problem was Stratton stuttered the line. And Charlotte,
that's right. And that's what Charlotte
took the opportunity to jump on it, which completely killed the line because she talked over the line.
Yeah.
Anyway, please continue.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the part that Charlotte just jumped on her, mocking her squeaky voice. Tiffany calls her a nepo baby. Flair qualifies it, I'm a nepo queen. And Stratton says that when it's all said and done, you're going to be alone, just like you are outside of the ring. Where, what's your record? 0-3, and woos at Charlotte. And then, and I guarantee you most of the audience couldn't even hear this, but Charlotte gets in the line, so why's Kaiser in my DMs? And this was like a train wreck. And I don't know, it was also like the most significant of their segments, because they tried to replicate what Cody and Cena did on Monday, like a personalized promo back and forth.
They tried to do a good promo segment, is what you're trying to say. Yeah.
But what this felt like was, first of all, this was like Tiffany's chance to be the aggressor. And it was just so, like, Charlotte was just like totally thrown off. And it felt like it felt like she's throwing like real daggers here at Charlotte. So, I mean, you can have the idea that they conveyed to people like this grudge aspect, but it was just such a train wreck. So I don't know what you made of it, Wei, but what did you feel about these 10 minutes?
I felt very similar to how I felt after their face-to-face. I thought it was like almost an exact replication, except in front of an audience.
It was the opposite, too. Like
of their face-to-face. Yeah, yeah. But I think the same in that it felt every bit as heated, but every bit as awkward, right? And we kind of like, again, talk about this, like in pro wrestling, you want things to feel real, but you also want them to feel perfect, you know? So it's sort of a strange like balance of, I think, what we expect. And I think it was very clear this was heated, but it was far from perfect, I think, from concept to execution. I continue to wonder how much is actually cleared between both parties before like these actual segments, because I almost like you watch a segment like this and you actually feel like Charlotte might be actually getting rattled by some of these lines that are designed to rattle her. And rather than just take it as I think the character should, you know, like in wrestling, sometimes you're on offense, sometimes you're on defense and you just sell, right? Rather than just sell it, she, for whatever reason, feels the need to speak up on air and continue to steamroll her opponent here in Tiffany Stratton. I thought Stratton like had some really good lines here, whether she came up with them or whether they were written for her. But by the end of it, I'm just left feeling like I saw another awkward segment where one person didn't really let the other person completely get what they needed to out of this. I also thought it kind of made Stratton look pretty cowardly saying the big line at the end, like the line about the divorce. Then she quickly ran away out of the ring, almost as if like she was scared of the repercussions. Like I don't know why the babyface would be made to do that.
Well, again, if you had watched the Sherry Shepherd segment, you would think Stratton was like just the worst type of heel here, in terms of like going with that as like the segment closer as well, which I think like most of the audience would think the same. Like, whatever, if you're not a fan of Charlotte Flair, like it's just like but obviously I don't think you know, they're just going out there and just winging this stuff. I'm sure that's, but it just, you want to have the balance. Like, you don't want it to feel like this choreographed exchange. At the same time, it's when every, like, it just, to me, the key here was like Charlotte seemed really just rattled, whether it was from the booze, and not even in such a way that like she was, it was almost like she just didn't know if she should be playing off these boos more or what, but it just, it was a very, very awkward, clunky type of segment. And that's kind of been the description of this entire program, that I don't know what the post mania path is going to be for these two.
I think it's totally cool to like, actually, you want people to look like they are rattled by things that are being said, but I rarely think it's okay for people to talk over each other. Like, even on a podcast like this, but especially like in a promo segment like that, save that anger for your response. And granted, the crowd wasn't really going to let her fully respond, but I think she could have pressed on anyway and given us at least some semblance of like what, you know, like a balanced back and forth rather than just ultimately what kind of felt like a one-sided shouting and another person shouting over top of them. So again, another awkward one, but look how much time we're spending talking about it. Maybe ultimately they're just kind of happy that this has created something that people are talking about.
Well, the idea of a segment like this is you want to convey the idea that, you know, this feels real, like with the lines that they're using. Like, you want to convey that. And even if it's a mess, if you can get to that level, then it's like kind of mission accomplished. If that was your hope to come out of this segment. So
now when we get to the match, I actually expect the match to be like actually a very choreographed match where like I don't think we'll get this sort of like butting of heads. So can they convey like a real grudge? Like, are these two capable of conveying like a real fight? Because I feel like they're both gymnasts, and I think by nature the match is going to look a lot more patterned.
Well, right? even gymnasts have their violent streak in them. So we will
We'll see.
Aldis then states that there will be a Raw and SmackDown women's tag gauntlet next week with brands from both sides, or well, teams from both sides, who will be determining who faces Liv Morgan and Raquel at WrestleMania. And let's just pull up the names that they have. So Caden Carter and Katana Chance, Lyra Valkyria and Bailey. Lyra is like reduced to this. Baszler and Zoe Stark, Meechan and B-Fab, Piper Niven and Elba Fire, and Natalia and Maxine. These are Maxine's big plans that she wanted to talk to Pierce about. So I can't imagine that Lyra and Bailey are not winning this, but we'll see next week.
Yeah, I would think so. It's just such a far
cry. Maybe we'll get a double pin at the end. Maybe we'll get a three-way. Natalia and Maxine will sneak in. I could absolutely see that happening.
I don't think that's out of the question. Yeah. But I mean, the story seems to point towards Bailey and Raquel and Liv and Lyra Valkyria. So, yep, probably it. And does it give you any idea, like indications of whether or not we get a male tag team match at SummerSlam or WrestleMania?
Well, I mean, we're going to get into this in the next match here, because we have a number one contenders match with the Machine Guns and DIY, where the Street Profits are seated in the front row to watch. And they had a very good match here. Gargano is like making fun of the Profits, even like crotch chopped in their direction. They had the heat on Shelley throughout the break. They come back. Saban is in. He takes a Project Ciampa, kicks out. Then he's hit with the fairy tale ending with the assisted super kick by Gargano, and Shelley breaks it up. Meet in the middle is a avoided when Saban rolls out, and then Shelley, when going for the skull and bones, gets shoved off the top to the floor. And as we get Ciampa using the rope for leverage, the referee Charles Robinson catches him. And earlier in the match, the turnbuckle pad had come off. So Ciampa runs at Saban, misses Saban, running into the exposed buckle, and Saban covers Ciampa and gets the win. And we have the Street Profits against the Machine Guns now set up as the next match.
Not at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Aldis needs to pull out that graph again to explain where all of this is going. But yeah, we continue. Like, Pretty Deadly had nothing to do with the tag program on this. Los Garza, they're involved with Phoenix. So I don't know. They could. Mm-hmm. I still imagine that this is going to be thrown together. But I don't know. This is feeling more like the SmackDown the night before than it is Mania.
Well, that show certainly needs something, and I feel like a tag team title match would feel like an appropriate level for that show, so we'll see.
And then we have The Miz and Carmelo Hayes. They're just wandering in the back, and they run into Pretty Deadly, who they call Pretty Useless, after blowing their tag title shot in England last week, their home country. And Pretty Deadly call them a joke, make fun of The Miz's Marine films, and Miz says, well, at least they were made. How's your musical coming along? And then they refer to Miz having all these partners that continue to be like younger and younger. You're the Leonardo DiCaprio of tag wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think of these jackets? I think Tito Ortiz used to sport these.
That or Bam Bam Bigelow. Yeah, they're very fitting for the gimmick.
Yeah. Poor Carmelo Hayes. I mean, at least he's...
What's he doing here?
I don't know, dude.
Like, he is just.
Remember when he was like just like so above the Miz and was like embarrassed by him, and now he's like doing all like his catchphrases. They're awes him.
Oh man, just embarrassing. Like, I'm just like, I'm flabbergasted, because I feel like this sort of era of like bad call ups should be over, but his call up has been pretty bad, man.
I mean, it's been almost a year. He's just. Yeah. It's unfortunate where he is. B-Fab and Naomi was next. As B-Fab comes out, Naomi makes her entrance and is jumped by Jade, and security comes out. Naomi crawls to the ring and the match proceeds. They mentioned B-Fab has been training with Natalya and Tyson Kidd at the Dungeon Training School. And you can definitely see like the improvements she has made here. She hits a uranage for a two count, missed a spin kick in the corner, and is placed in the Tree of Woe, where Naomi just kicks her into the buckle upside down. And then introduces this new finisher where she kind of grabs the wrist like a Kamigoye, but then just leans back with a knee strike that they called a modified lung blower. And this needs a name, and Naomi won.
Sort of like a Kamigoye eat defeat type of combo, you know?
Yeah.
I like it.
I'll come up with something.
Okay. Yes. I like it. It's quick. Like, she can hit it on any sized opponent. And yep. I think it looks menacing enough or different enough from, like, you know, the type of high flying moves that she used to do. B-Fab, like you said, I thought showed, like, continues to show good improvement. She showed some added aggression here. they are giving her a lot of chances. And I think that's largely due to, like, she's got great height. She has a lot of confidence as a speaking, you know, in these sort of backstage segments. So I'm sure they see a lot of potential in her. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Naomi calls out Jade and... like, poof, Jade is in the ring. I was like, where did she come from? She's in the ring and nails her with a kick, but Jade is stopped when security come in, and Jade is throwing the security out. So all this comes out and makes the match for WrestleMania.
That's it, yeah.
A singles match at WrestleMania. Can you believe it?
They're both very happy. Yeah, they got what they, I guess they both got what they wanted. So this has been one of the hotter and one of the better built programs leading to WrestleMania. So in ring, you know, Jade Cargill as a singles wrestler is still rather untested, at least on TV up until this point. How long do you think this goes, this match?
Oh boy, I'd keep this one under 10.
Under 10. Yeah, that would be enough. Yeah,
I mean, I think if you're going to do Jade just getting her revenge, it doesn't need to go long, but
she's gotten her revenge at every turn. She's beaten the shit out of Naomi.
I see so much more value in Naomi. She's agreed. Just turned. It's like Jade is, I don't know. It wouldn't be my call, but I could also see just this being a, like a bulldozer, going through Naomi.
Yeah.
Damian Priest hired his own production company for a response to Drew, who he calls the victim. He says, I did my job cashing in Money in the Bank. Because of your weird obsession with Punk, you've screwed yourself repeatedly. I eliminated you at the Rumble and the Chamber, and you attacked me like a coward. And you just make excuses. You point the finger at everyone but yourself. You're a junkie, and you better pray, because it's time for you to pray. Look for me in the middle of the ring next week for... a face-to-face, and you will become my victim at WrestleMania. So I'm looking forward to our ninth face-to-face in this lead-up to WrestleMania. This should be something.
These would just be somewhat impromptu face-to-faces, not because we actually have to promote them ahead of time. We need a label for a talk.
They're more environmentally conscious now when it comes to contract signings. They're just going to do face-to-faces instead. Like, let's not waste paper.
Yeah, right. Verbal contract. Okay.
Then Nick Aldis is in the ring, and he explains that this is the part of the job that is not fun, and there's a reason we say don't try this at home, and that's when Kevin Owens comes out explaining that he's been doing this for 25 years, he's done incredible things, been able to take care of his family, but there is a price to pay and a toll on our bodies for everyone in the back, and it just so happens it's now my turn. And he explains that he's had the problem with his neck for 4 months, and he's out. It sucks he won't be in the ring with Orton, and he doesn't know when he'll be in front of you again, but he learned a long time ago not to take anything for granted, and he just thanks the fans and apologizes. And this was tough to pull off, because you could tell the audience, like, when he came out and even when he started the promo, and I don't even blame the audience, like, they're just assuming, like, this is something the Kevin Owens character would do, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And there's like a few minutes in, it's like they realize, it's like everyone clicked and realized, okay, this is not Kevin Owens playing on everybody.
I will say I did stop for a second and consider the shade of the jacket that he happened to be wearing.
The shade?
Pink, close to salmon.
Oh, okay. I definitely did not make anywhere near that connection.
I thought it was at least a slight possibility.
No, but Randy comes out, and they lock eyes, and then Owens takes off, and he leaves, and we got the RKO onto Nick Aldis to end the segment. So we will see what becomes of Randy Orton. It would it's tough. Like, everyone's like, you've got all your stuff planned in, and I mean, you could just insert Randy into a multi-man match and add him, or I don't know. I don't know what they'll do with
him. You could. There are, like, you know, names out there that I think would be somewhat appropriate. Like, Sammy is still supposed to be out because of the injury. Can they build up some sort of storyline, you know, to get to a Sammy and Randy Orton interaction? He's somebody who might come to mind. There are others. Sheamus, you know.
You know what? Let's just do it. Randy Orton versus Rey Fénix.
Yeah, sure.
I would love that match.
Somebody in the chat room suggested Aleister Black, you know, as a potential. Miro is out there as well, like if you want a big surprise. But, you know, Orton is, like, if it was a heel, I think it'd be a lot easier to, like, bring up one of those baby faces. The fact that it's Orton going up against a surprise, a bit harder for it to be a heel. But, I mean, they could do whatever they want.
It's the unfortunate, like, realistically, we're looking at either a cold match or you just state, you know what, it's not in the cards and we're just going to put you on. We're going to set something up for the night after Mania or SmackDown after Mania. Like that has happened to performers in the past where it's just like, it's your odd man out and the numbers are accounted for and we're not going to just shoehorn a match in. I mean,
I'm sure they can find a celebrity that Orton can come out and RKO and send people home happy.
I show speed.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about that match?
Apparently he's training, isn't it? Travis Scott. Where is he?
Oh, another one. Let's go to the last man standing match. Jacob Fatu and Braun Strowman. These two, they just went out and they had their WrestleMania match here in Chicago. I'll reserve judgment till Mania both nights are over, but you cannot tell me that this is going to underperform what the U.S. title match is at WrestleMania. This to me,
this will be better.
Yeah. This should have been the WrestleMania match right here. This was great. I thought they just went nonstop for the duration that they had. Fatu hits a pair of springboard moonsaults early, but Braun gets up. They brawl throughout. Braun brings out a table. They do the Strowman Express spot where both crash through the timekeeper's area. And then they go into the audience. Strowman is lighting him up with chair shots. And they get on top of the equipment. And Braun suplexes him through two tables. And this crowd goes nuts as they battle to their feet, getting back ringside. And into the ring they go. There's a table set up in the corner. And Braun gets set up and nailed with the hip attack, crashing through the table. And he tries to get to his feet at 9, but collapses. And Jacob Fatu wins. I thought this was great. I was fully expecting like some kind of wonky finish that we'd get to a 3-way. I like the fact that they said, no, this is to get Jacob Fatu over. The match is LA Knight and Jacob Fatu that I am far less interested than seeing these two go at a, I don't know. This to me would have been my preferred pairing at Mania, but LA Knight is the champion and they're going with that. So that's what we've got. But I thought they did a great job, both of them.
Yeah, this was an awesome match that again follows that Bronson Reed, Braun Strowman style that they've established so well over the past year. But now used, I would say, with somebody with even more upside in Jacob Fatu. Sorry, Bronson Reed. A great spectacle. It makes Fatu even more likable. And Strowman, I think, continues to show, despite the fact that he's at a supporting role, it shows you how valuable he is for his ability to put on matches like these with guys like a Bronson Reed and guys like a Jacob Fatu. So I hope Knight versus Fatu can be... It can have some elements of this, you know, can have some elements of the chaos and like the big spots. I'm curious to know how the crowd will react to it, but you have to also assume, I'm sure you're going to get Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga involvement in that as well to perhaps sway things over. Like the crowd will be booing those two instead of either of the two in the ring.
I could see this one having a bunch of run-ins, like Braun could get involved. You could have, you know, some multiple run-ins to assist as well. So we'll see what they have cooked up for Mania, but this was definitely worth checking out if you want to go through some highlights of SmackDown. They went through the Cody Cena segment from Monday, and then next week in Seattle, it's the Women's Tag Gauntlet, Rey Fénix against Berto, and the face-to-face with Damian and Drew, which Wade noted would be going eye-to-eye, literally, for Drew, who's got one eye now.
Right. Yes. So
thank you, Wade. Then we go on to the final segment of the night, which included Paul Heyman, who is still waiting for Roman Reigns to arrive. And it is getting very late. Is Roman going to make it? And after the break, Reigns pulls up and he just bolts right for the ring. And for the first time, this might have been the quickest Roman Reigns entrance throughout the whole Bloodline era.
Well, they knew they had an overrun, but not that long of an overrun. And they knew that both all of them had a lot to say. So, yeah, this is power walking.
Yes, they have, like, usually it is like the hard out that they have, but it's like, we're not on network television anymore. Like, what in God's name does the USA Network have to get to at 11 p.m.? Nothing.
No. So what are you arguing for?
I'm just stating every week. Like, I'm not advocating for an overrun. I'm just stating, like, if they need an overrun, like, what USA Network, like, what leg do they have to stand on to argue?
So is that an argument for a longer Roman entrance?
No. No, it's an argument for let's get to June and 2 hour SmackDowns. Okay, that's what I want. Okay. Reigns comes out and he acknowledges, or he has Chicago acknowledge him, and the crowd is chanting for Punk. Reigns says Punk wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me. He wouldn't be in the main event if it wasn't for me. And he makes fun of Chicago for liking him just because you're all from the same city. Punk has wrestled everyone, but never headline Mania. And he wants Punk to come out. He wants to know what this favor is. But instead, Rollins comes out and he mentions the fact that, you know, in many of the main events you've been in, Reigns, I've been there for the heist of the century. I main evented Mania last year. And he wants to know the favor too. And Reigns explains to him how he knows nothing about being trustworthy, going back to their history between each other. And Reigns, you underestimated Punk, and you made the mistake of not letting me finish him, and says that I learned that I could either suffer and get left behind or adapt and control reality. And this is when Punk, he states, is in the main event because of the wise man, Reigns says. He keeps his word. And with that, Punk comes out, and he explains that this favor, it's about friendship, legacy, promises, and loyalty. And it goes back to Louisville, Kentucky. This goes back to Ohio Valley Wrestling. And he tells Heyman that back in 2005, he walked in and said he doesn't belong here. And that people told Heyman that Punk doesn't belong here and to fire him. And yet Heyman refused. And then when Heyman famously left after the disastrous December to Dismember show, he was on the Big Show's bus. It was Punk, Heyman, Big Show, and RVD. And Punk was stating how they were going to fire him once Heyman left. And Heyman said, you're going to be fine. And Punk apologized at the time for making it about himself. And he remembers what Heyman told him that time, 19 years ago, when you main event WrestleMania, force them to deal with us. Well, they aren't here anymore. So he's going to force Roman Reigns to force him out of his comfort zone. And you're going to have to deal with us, because at WrestleMania, Paul Heyman will be in my corner. Reigns just laughs this off and says that Heyman loves me. He needs me. I saved him. And he says Heyman would never do it. Even if I let him, he wouldn't. Paul, let this desperate fool down easily. And Heyman, who is incredible here, just starts crying. He's got these bloodshot eyes, and Reigns looks at him and says, are you crying? I took you back into relevancy. Tell him no. And Heyman looks at Roman and says, no, my tribal chief, I can't do that. Meanwhile, Seth Rollins is laughing his ass off at this. I thought Rollins was actually hysterical here, playing off of all of this infighting. And Punk, as Reigns goes towards Heyman in the corner, Punk jumps him from behind, attacks him, and hits the GTS, stares down Seth as Paul just looks on in horror at what has happened, screaming, no! And that's how this ended. And the favor has been requested that Heyman must corner CM Punk at WrestleMania.
I thought it was a big letdown of a reveal.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
what were you expecting him to ask for?
I don't know, some sort of stipulation to be attached to it. Like, so to assume that this is a big deal would basically, I'm supposed to believe that having Paul Heyman in a corner is going to somehow affect the outcome of the match. So you're already guaranteeing shenanigans. And I guess this is triple threat, so there's no DQ. But I also, like, it's not like Paul Heyman has been the difference maker in Roman Reigns matches. The bloodline has been the difference maker in Roman Reigns matches. So what exactly does having Paul Heyman in Punk's corner do for him? Why is that such a big deal?
He's the strategist. He's the guy that sets up the plays, and he is considered like he's the brains of the unit.
So he needs Paul Heyman's strategy heading into the match.
Yeah, I think that's been the whole thing here, is this whole story. It's like, it was Heyman that joined Roman and brought him to this higher level, and it's like the player coach, and now he is without his head coach for the big game of the year, and he's in his opponent's corner. I really didn't mind this at all. Like, I assumed like this was probably where this was going to lead, and what you can naturally pull off here with it, like, you could, like, if some title match was attached to this, like, it kind of goes out of like the purview of what like a Heyman could deliver to this guy. It's not an authority figure. You can't do this.
Yeah, but there's a way in wrestling that you could explain anything, right?
So last week we had Rollins like losing his mind over all of this, and this week he comes back and he's in a total like 180. He's like just on top of the world, and I think there's like a grand chance that you do this where everyone's assuming that Heyman is going to screw someone, and it's Rollins that he aligns with.
Yeah, I think that's a very big possibility.
I think they've set this up. I don't know. I like this segment quite a bit, and like this three-way to me, like the build has been fine, but nothing tremendous. And I thought this was like a cool plot twist for it. So I was not as down on this as the payoff to it. And I don't know how much more you could have played out this favor.
To me, like making us wait 6 months for this, it feels to me like a bit of a letdown. But you know, I don't know what the online reaction is to it. Maybe a lot of people agree with you more than me.
Stay offline. That's my rule. That's why I can sift through this business. All right. Well, there you go. That was 3 hours of SmackDown. Not a minute too late. And we are going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube channel. If you want to keep your Friday night going, then you can do so. PostWrestlingCafe.com. Plop down your $6 and then you can stay with us into the wee hours of Saturday morning every single week. And we will be back here on the YouTube channel Sunday night immediately after AEW Dynasty. So we are going to say goodbye to you.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.